And that music means it's time for another week of shows. Good afternoon. I'm Avi Wolfman. Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And this is Studio 2, the best live conversation in Philadelphia.
The best one.
Yes. And this is our first show in the fall. It's autumn now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Summer has ended. Wow. Avi, are you okay with that?
I mean, that kind of snuck up on me. Wait, that's your bit.
It came so fast. Oh, my goodness. So
my bad. I did not mean to tread on your territory there. You're right.
It's all right.
It didn't sneak up on me. I take that back.
So, you know, in my house, Avi, I'm in charge of groceries.
Okay. Captain Groceries.
Captain Groceries, all of that. And let me tell you, things have been expensive for quite some time, to the point my middle name is now Aldi. Okay.
What?
Discount shopper extraordinaire, coupon clipper. That's what I do now. Like, because I need to save every single dollar. And so
Cherry A. Gregg. Got it.
Yeah, Cherry A. Gregg now. But so this has been an issue on the campaign trail. Politicians on both sides of the aisle. And you know how we do here at Studio 2 when things start popping up. We start asking questions. And we said, is this really a wedge issue for voters? And so our question for today, and we're building a whole show. We're going to bring in the experts on this topic. How are grocery store prices affecting your family? Are grocery store prices a top issue for you in this election? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Are you the grocery store guy in the Wolfman Arendt household?
It's a mix. It's a mix. Mostly not. But this is not a big issue for me because I have a hack. I do.
Share.
Well, so what I do is I make wagers with my coworkers and then I win them and then they buy me lunch. So my food costs have come way down.
Yeah, you're going to get a good lunch. We're going to hook you up.
But I know for a lot of you, you don't have that hack. So give us a call, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. Now a trio of local news stories. And Cherry, I know you're really pumped.
Thrilled
about this first one. The Philadelphia Phillies won last night over the Chicago Cubs.
Go
and
Phils.
In doing so, they clinched the National League East division. Now, they had already qualified for the playoffs before last night. This is the third straight season they'll be in the postseason. But winning the National League East is a real big accomplishment for the organization because they had not done that since 2011. So congratulations to the Phillies on being National League East champions.
Go Phils.
Do you have any questions about this? Anything I can answer for you?
Not really.
Okay.
But I'm really excited, and I hope that this means that they'll do better. They'll do really great in the playoffs, and that they will win the World Series. They will go to the World Series and win.
Yes. Playoffs start in October, by the way. Do you want to know what the top song in America was the last time the Phillies clinched the National League East? Someone Like You by Adele.
Oh.
September 2011. That was the top song in America.
2011. Wow. Yeah.
Number two was Moves Like Jagger by Maroon 5.
Wow. I can't believe 2011 was like 13 years ago.
It was indeed.
Wow.
It's just like fall. It sneaks
it
up
sneaks
on you.
It sneaks up on you. 13 years.
Okay. Story number two now. Mm-hmm. So a lot of you might know about Philly's famous graffiti pier. And the news coming out of a community meeting yesterday is that this property may finally, after decades, be sold and redeveloped. So Graffiti Pier is on the Delaware River. It partially collapsed over the summer. Some very dramatic video came out of that partial collapse. So it was in the news over the summer. This pier was once a pier for loading coal onto trains, but it's been abandoned since about 1980. And for years and years, people would go onto the property and do street art, graffiti. That's why it's called Graffiti Pier. They'd hang out. They'd go fishing in the Delaware River. And it actually became very big on Instagram. Graffiti Pier.
It's cool looking.
It's cool
really
looking.
Cool looking.
It's all over. Of what remains of it is very cool looking. But the news is that yesterday, Conrail, which owns Graffiti Pier along the Delaware River, told community members that it hopes to sell the pier to the Delaware River Waterfront Corporation by the end of the year. So this saga that's been going on since like 1980 may finally come to an end. And when they sell it, hopefully, the DRWC will be able to repurpose it as a public park and an artist space, thus officially reclaiming this long abandoned pier along the Delaware River.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And, you know, I've been really fascinated with how the waterfront here in Philadelphia is transforming.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's just kind of cool because you'll be able to, you know, see it. And Delaware River Waterfront Corporation has been behind a lot of the transformation,
yep,
building up the Ray Street Pier, Cherry Street Pier, yep, all those different places. And so this is going to be really cool. All the graffiti artists are going to be able to, you know, I mean, but I know they like to not do things that are sanctioned, but this will be a sanctioned space.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully, very likely. Hopefully it'll still have the allure. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's also an interesting reminder to me, like a lot of places that are in disrepair or abandoned are owned by like these legacy industrial mm-hmm. companies that have kind of owned them for a long, long time. In this case, it's Conrail. But it also reminded me of the fact that, you know, they're trying to build that Highline style park in, mm-hmm. in Philadelphia mm-hmm. where the Reading Viaduct used to be, the old Reading yeah. Railroad used to run. And that property is owned by this like spinoff of the Reading Railroad Company that now owns like movie theaters in Australia. And in order to like redevelop a city like Philly, you have to negotiate with like these old school shell companies of once great companies. It's just so complicated. And this is a case where it has been very complicated.
And it was very interesting because one of the articles I read said that Conrail said, look, we can't watch this property 24/7.
Right.
Like
this is
just a small piece of our total,
right,
you know, all the properties we own. And
they've been using
so,
it since 1980.
We haven't really been paying yeah. attention to it.
Yeah.
So it's better to give it to
and
someone.
There's so many spaces like that
someone.
In a,
yeah.
in a deindustrialized city like Philadelphia. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just a reminder.
Yeah. And so moving on to an effort that is serious, but it's taking on a bit of an interesting twist.
Mm-hmm.
A South Philadelphia man who is in need of a new kidney has gotten really creative in the effort to find a living donor. He's been very creative, right? He is slapping, quote, need a kidney stickers on as many street poles, in as many bathrooms and bars, and on as many road signs as he can find. His name is Dave Peterson. He's 29 years old, and he has been living with polycystic kidney disease since he was 18, and it's pretty grueling, and it forced the removal of his kidneys earlier this year, which is why he launched this guerrilla-style marketing campaign. But, you know, this reminds me of, you know, a very serious topic that people have gotten very creative about. I've seen billboards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where folks are like, hey, I need a kidney. I've seen people do kidney scavenger hunts
what?
Across the city to raise money and awareness.
Whoa.
People have T-shirt campaigns, social media campaigns, all these different things. Why, you're probably wondering? Well, 104,000 people are waiting for an organ transplant, and about 90,000 of those people are waiting for a kidney. So people need kidneys more than any other
yeah.
organ. And only about a quarter of those people on the wait list actually get a transplant in a year. And the average wait for a kidney is 3 to 5 years, which means that people can literally die while waiting on the list. I've had a family member die while waiting on the list.
Mm.
And so it's a pretty serious thing. It reminds me of that show we did about whether or not people should be compensated for becoming living donors to
right.
help get more people to donate a kidney, because you don't need both of them. And it just raised a very serious issue, but he's gotten very creative. I want to also mention someone I've known for years, Antoine Johnson, just went on Fox 29. He too needs a kidney, pretty young guy. And you just think it could happen to anyone. And both of these folks are fairly young.
Yeah.
But they're, again, if you see that need a kidney sticker, you know, and that's him. He also has a band that he's raising awareness about through the stickers. His band has a funny name. It's called Hallucinogenic Bulb.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's promoting his band, too.
Got
and
it.
I got to shout him out for really just taking this and turning it into a positive, making it a little funny, but knowing that it's a really serious thing. And it's affecting a lot of people.
And credit to the Philadelphia Inquirer, by
yeah,
the way,
for this story.
For highlighting this story, writing this story. Jimena Condi at the Inquirer, well done. So right now we're going to transition out of our news chat and into the break so we can get to our main segment today. How are grocery store prices affecting your family? That's our big question.
Yeah.
Are grocery store prices a top issue for you this election? If you want to weigh in, and a lot of people already have, give us a call, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. As we go out
yes.
this segment, you are hearing Blues March by saxophonist, composer, and legendary Philadelphian Benny Golson. He passed away Saturday at the age of 95. Take us out, Benny.
Rest in peace.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Oddly, in our house, it's like the cereal that we like has gone up at least $2 a box over the past 2 years. And it was already kind of on the bougie end of the scale. And now we have to make a decision, like, do we eat more cereal this week or do we have more eggs?
We are very precise on like a budget. Like when we go into a store, we're just like, okay, we're only spending $200. And within that $200, we're like, what exactly do we really need? This is what we need. This is what we're going to stick with.
And welcome back. This is Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And those voices were of sharpers in our region, and they were gathered by students at WHYY's Education Department. So now, we don't need a fancy intro to tell you that grocery prices have gone up a lot. I felt the pain. You feel the pain, right? Something like 25% since the start of the pandemic. Lately, inflation has cooled. Prices are closer to stable, but the political conversation around prices remains red hot. So, why did food prices rise?
Cherry.
Yes.
It's obviously because of pandemic stimulus money.
Oh, yeah.
Or the war in Ukraine. Mm. Or, you know, actually, I had heard that it was entirely driven by corporate greed.
That sounds
plausible. Yeah, plausible. But maybe we should just bring in some experts and ask them. So here to help us explain the economics and politics of grocery store inflation is Errol Schweitzer, former vice president of grocery at Whole Foods Market and publisher of the Checkout Grocery Update Substack. Errol, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Heather Long, economic columnist at The Washington Post. Heather, thanks for joining us on Studio 2.
Good to be here.
Yes, and we've got comments streaming in already. Our big question for you this hour: how are grocery store prices affecting your family? Are grocery store prices a top issue for you this election? You can email studio2@whyy.org or call 888-477-9499.
Let me start with just a smattering of comments because they are truly all over the place. And I think it'll set the table because this is going to be a sprawling conversation. So Donna says, the government does not affect prices. It can affect the thievery profit mongers at the top, though, by making sure they are taxed appropriately. To which someone replied on social media, Barry said, actually, massive spending and Fed policy does have an effect. Mm-hmm. Michael and Barbara say, I don't think the president can do much, but prices are a concern. Fred says the president has nothing to do with the prices of commodity. Georgine says prices are dropping. Okay, yeah. You get the picture, right? So Heather, before we get into grocery stores specifically, I wanted to ask you, where is inflation now? And where is the economy right now? I know that's a really big question, but give people a sense of where the broader economy and where the inflation conversation is right now.
Yeah, it's a good one. So I would call the broader economy overall, we're solid or very solid, maybe a B+, let's say, type of economy. And that's a really good feeling. We were in an incredibly hot economy coming out of the pandemic, but there were also so many weird potholes and problems going on in the economy. And now we're in a normal place, but in many ways, we've forgotten what normal feels like after all this turbulence. In terms of inflation, prices are still high, and you can hear that in the comments that people are making. It depends what metric you look at, but prices overall are up 20% to 25% on average in the past 3 to 5 years, and people's wages on average are up about the same amount. But if you feel like you're falling behind, because most people, it sticks in your mind that things cost more, and you feel like that's really something that's hurt you, and you feel like you deserve those pay increases and those raises. So the good news, if there's any encouraging news, is the prices aren't getting worse. We're finally seeing what's called inflation. The rate of change in prices has come back to something that's far more normal. Our latest read on that was 2.5% growth in the past year. That's almost back to the 2% normal that we have experienced for decades prior to the pandemic. So we feels like the emergency situation is over, but it doesn't mean that we've necessarily seen prices fall in many areas. And that's what I think a lot of people would like to see happen.
And so I want to bring you, Errol, into the conversation, because part of this, the feeling that regular folks like us, what we feel is, you know, grocery store prices and prices of gas and things like that. So I want to bring you in. Can you kind of give us an understanding of how grocery store prices changed over the past few years due to what Heather was talking about, this emergency type of inflation situation?
Yeah, well, we could talk about the cause in a moment. Let's first lay out the actual stats. And my stats are actually based on syndicated product data from the industry itself. So the data that Heather is quoting is publicly available, Bureau of Labor Statistics data. It's actually lower than the industry data, which is based on a weighted average of all prices across all grocery chains. And it's closer to 30% since 2019. So prices up, that's an average. Mm-hmm. Now, in different departments, the meat department, for instance, prices are up over 40%. Should be obvious for those folks who buy meat. Mm-hmm. Grocery ambient packaged foods prices are up over 30%. Dairy prices are up close to 40%. So when you talk about these sort of like averages, it actually underestimates what the true prices increases have been. And if you look at certain categories, like beef prices are up over 40%. A personal favorite of mine, tater tot prices are up over 65%.
Tater tots are up 65%. What? So yes. maybe let's pick one and go inside it. Like, how do tater tots go up 65%?
We have to talk about consolidation in the food industry, if you're going to talk about the why. So bear with me. In the Philadelphia area, there are three grocery chains that control about 42-43% of all grocery sales. Walmart, Acme, which is Albertsons, and then Giant, which is Ahold Delhaize. Mm-hmm. In most metro areas of the United States, you have three or four grocery chains that control 50%+. In many metro areas, Walmart controls over 60%. Okay, that's stores. Then you also have to look by category, purchase occasion, like what people actually buy. Cereal, cookies, crackers, yogurt, bread, soft drinks, salty snacks. In almost all packaged food categories, three or four companies control 50, 60, 70% of product sales. In fact, there was just an acquisition last week where General Mills unloaded Yoplait to a European company, European co-op Lactalis.
So what you're describing is consolidation.
Let me just finish this. Yeah, yeah. Meaning that three companies are going to control 75% of all yogurt sales in the U.S.
So I want to understand the broader point. You're saying there's been consolidation in the grocery store industry. That's the point of sale people. And there's consolidation in the chain.
Not only there, but there's consolidation even further back in ingredients. So there's four companies that control 65% of all grain trading in the world. They're called the ABCDs: Archer Daniels Midland, Bunge, Cargill, Dreyfus.
Yeah.
And then, you know, on a national level, you have about six companies that control 65% of all grocery sales in total, Walmart being 30% nationally when you count Walmart plus Sam's Club, Kroger, which isn't in this area, which is about 10, Albertsons, which is Acme, which is about 7. So at all levels of the supply chain, you have intense consolidation. And when you have intense consolidation like that, it implies that they can control prices.
So the intense consolidation, I assume, is not brand new, though.
It has been a major trend over the last 40 years.
So what happened recently then that drove the prices up, if the consolidation has been ongoing and building for 40 years?
When you control prices, you can... When you consolidate industries, you could set prices. because there's not alternatives. There's not enough competition. In addition, what has happened, and you've seen this on earnings calls left and right, particularly in packaged food companies that are in highly concentrated categories like soft drinks, like Pepsi, or cookies and crackers like Mondelez or Kraft Heinz, cereals like Kellogg's, General Mills. On the earnings calls, CEOs and CFOs keep saying, well, we raise prices above the rate of our cost increases in order to make our earnings. What they're saying is, we raise prices higher to consumers than the costs we received in order to rake additional profits.
Why wouldn't they have done that before the pandemic, though?
Because you weren't in a, quote, inflationary setting. Inflation in itself, and this is a concept called seller's inflation, which is articulated by an economist, Isabella Weber, who's probably one of the clearest experts on this, and one of the few economists actually makes sense relative to the information that I follow and being in the grocery industry, in that there's, yeah, there's crises. There's things happening in the world. There were supply chain shocks, which we all remember in 2020 and 21. However, demand has actually been down since 2019 in most of these categories. So the usual supply-demand curve increasing prices didn't actually happen. And you've seen study after study after study, Economic Policy Institute, the IMF, the OECD, the Federal Reserve Bank, 50-plus percent of these price increases are from profits.
Yeah. And before we continue our conversation, I want to just ask you the question of the day. How are grocery store prices affecting your family? Are grocery store prices a top issue for you in this election? You can email studio2@whyy.org. You can call 888-477-9499. And I want to bring in a caller. We have Ron, who thinks that this is an important issue. Ron, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment here?
Hey, thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate your show. What I wanted to say is that, yeah, I think it is an important issue. I mean, I know our family is really struggling since our wages aren't going up anywhere near as much as inflation is. But I think the problem is, in terms of affecting the election, is I don't see any either political party willing to make the kinds of interventions that need to happen. Mm. And this is particularly frustrating to us because we're spending billions of our tax dollars on a war that we really shouldn't be involved in. And we're supporting human rights crimes in the Middle East instead of putting price controls on food here in the U.S.
So you think it's price controls, Ron? That's what you think would solve it?
Well, I'm not saying that it's necessarily a solution, but I've spent a lot of time outside of the U.S., and a lot of places have both subsidies and they have limits on how much prices can increase on particular staples. I'm speaking specifically about things like rice and bread. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've noticed, I've worked all over Latin America, is governments know that in Latin America, and often when they release those price controls, you have riots. That's exactly what happened in Venezuela in 1989.
Yeah, thank you
so much,
Ron.
There's a perspective from Ron. Thanks, Ron.
Yeah, Ron, thank you for that. I want to bring Heather back into the conversation because we heard a lot of what Errol had to say about, you know, just this consolidation. But when people feel these prices, these, you know, I mean, what Cheez-Its cost around 75% more than they used to. I mean, 75 cents more than they used to. I want to just ask you, like, who do they typically blame for this? Do they see this as, oh, it's a consolidation problem? Where do people's minds typically go when they're paying more for the same products that they bought several years ago?
I'm sure Earl has thoughts on this, but I think from what I've seen in focus groups is people often blame the grocery store when actually there's this whole chain going on behind the grocery store for the product and how it gets to the shelves. That's usually more problematic than the actual front person putting it on the shelves. I do think what we've been talking about, it's and what the caller Ron was just mentioning, you know, it does go to the reason that Vice President Harris has put forward this going after price gouging plan. And it stirred up a lot of reaction when it was brought out in August. But the heart of the policy proposal that she's making is one to try to do more antitrust efforts. So literally to have the government bring legal cases and challenges against the consolidated producers that Earl was talking about and in some cases against grocery stores. As you may know, the Biden administration is currently fighting the merger of two of our largest grocers, Kroger and Albertsons, arguing that that could potentially raise prices, and we could have a whole debate on that, but that this notion that we need to fight back against these companies is a lot of what she's saying. The problem is, of course, legal challenges, as we all know, they take a long time to work their way through the court system. And so it's just a very slow way to potentially have any impact here on what's been going on.
And let's actually hear from Vice President Kamala Harris. Here she is in Raleigh, North Carolina, last month, speaking to a crowd of supporters on this very issue.
Many of the big food companies are seeing their highest profits in two decades. And while many grocery chains pass along these savings, others still aren't. Look, I know most businesses are creating jobs, contributing to our economy, and playing by the rules. But some are not. And that's just not right.
So, Heather Long, let me push this back to you now. Because this explanation for inflation does cut against the grain of what economists have been telling us about prices for a long, long time. And I think a lot of economists would still point to the fact that there was a huge economic stimulus, there was labor and supply shortages, and that's a pretty like orthodox explanation for why prices go up. Heather Long, I mean, what do we say about that kind of conventional wisdom? Excuse me.
Yeah, I'm probably one of the more people in the middle on this debate. So I would say the easiest way that I think to think about it is the bulk of the inflation can be explained by the supply chain glitches and the labor shortages, which certainly played out. I can remember talking to people who were raising chickens who said, I literally don't know if my chickens are going to be picked up this week and taken, you know, to the poultry slaughterhouse because there are not enough workers right now. So these were very real issues, including in the food sector. But I think what Earl was describing is I would say what really put it over the top in 2022 is that companies realized that this was such a unique situation and that they could keep raising prices in ways that they simply couldn't before the pandemic. And part of the reason they could do that is because there was a crisis and people were almost conditioned to seeing that prices were going up. And part of it was probably because people were getting those stimulus checks, getting those various aid payments. And so they had a little bit more money to spend. And a lot of people, they noticed the prices going up, but they were able to absorb some of those price increases, at least initially in 2021 and 2022, while they still had a lot of extra savings. Now the situation is totally different. People have run down their savings. We have record credit card debt. People are using their credit cards to pay for the basics, and people are really pushing back now against those price increases. And so the more interesting question is, why have profit margins at places like Walmart and Costco come down a lot while they haven't at some other major grocery chains?
Yeah, very interesting. I want to read a couple of these comments we're getting. We have Dave, who's an urban beekeeper in Philadelphia. He emailed and said, people should know that the farmers are not getting more money for their products. The big agricultural corporations are able to keep the prices down because they control both sides of the market. Josh emails, says, I went to St. Martin recently, and it was amazing that the healthy food like meat and veggies and wine were cheap. And I'm glad that Josh threw wine in there. It's healthy.
It comes from grapes.
And subsidized, and that unhealthy food like packaged snacks were not subsidized. And so, Errol, I want to bring you back into the conversation and kind of retool that question I gave to Heather earlier about who people blame for these prices. You gave out this web. You told us about this web of consolidation that's been happening for 40 years. Do people have any real understanding of this? Who do they blame? And who can they put pressure on to bring these prices down?
Yeah, I mean, bringing it back to Vice President Harris, the most important thing that they can do is actually enforce the laws. So it's great they're bringing attention to the things we all are aware of. And, you know, Senator Casey here has done the same thing. He did a study about shrinkflation. Mm-hmm. They should just be enforcing laws to start with. And, you know, part of what they're doing with these investigations and with, you know, what FTC has been doing is really admirable. The FTC has woken up after 40 years. There are laws on the books like Robinson-Patman Act, which is all about preventing price discrimination based on consolidation. It comes from the New Deal, and it was when a company called A&P was the largest grocery chain in the United States. They only had about 14% market share, relatively small now. There's other antitrust laws on the books. Clayton, Sherman, these antitrust acts haven't been enforced in the last 40 years, and that is why you have all this consolidation. Mm-hmm. So it's easiest to blame the grocers, but grocers, you know, if you're buying from an independent grocery store or a little food co-op or an employee-owned store, they're a price taker. They're not a price
right.
maker.
They're
the getting the costs from these manufacturers. A lot of this inflation has come from the manufacturing side. And I think one of your callers said that they're making money off of both sides, particularly in the meat industry. They're underpaying farmers than overcharging retailers. But retailers are pretty guilty, too, particularly you've seen it on earnings calls. Walmart, Kroger admitting how they've passed pricing on above the rate of their cost increases.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned there the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. Mm-hmm. And Mary emailed us, said Lena Khan, who is commissioner of the FTC, was on 60 Minutes and commented that grocery stores have raised their prices. In reviewing letters to shareholders, they admit that raising their prices has increased profits. That's what Mary says. But let me go back to, I guess, you know, economics 101, right, Errol? So if I'm one of the big food companies at any point in the chain, and I see everyone raising their prices to take advantage of this inflationary period, why don't I just go in, undercut them, and take their share of the market? You know, capitalism 101. Why doesn't someone just buck the trend, tell their investors, just have a 20-year view with me, I'm about to clean these guys out?
It's called the price-profit spiral. Investors reward companies that control market share. They reward companies that are able to control pricing by rewarding them with higher stock prices, which then the company puts into buybacks and dividends so that everybody, you know, at the top and, you know, the major shareholders are making billions. And that's what happened across the board with Pepsi and Nestle and Walmart. I mean, the Walton family controls 46% plus of Walmart stock. So there's too much of an incentive when you control the market share to pass the pricing on, because it juices your profits, which juices your stock price, which juices your buybacks and dividends. And that's, like I said, it's a concept called the price profit spiral. I'm not an economist. I'm an operator. I'm a consultant. I'm a merchandiser. This stuff is all new to me, and I'm learning it almost like on the fly. Like, how do we explain the things that I'm actually seeing? Yeah. So when I talk to companies that I work with in the food industry, and said, they tell me, I passed a 15% price increase on to my key retailer customer, and they took a 40% price increase on shelf. I was seeing that again and again and again and again over the last few years. That's what clued me in to say, oh, there's something else afoot here, and it's because of pricing power based on market share domination. So it's very easy to blame the grocer, but like I said, it's at all levels of the food industry, because regulators have been out to lunch. Mm-hmm. They haven't been enforcing laws around controlling consolidation, therefore controlling pricing power. So when you talk about price controls, there are price controls now. Big companies control the prices. Yeah. So let's be clear, when we're talking about a price gouging ban, what, you know, Harris has proposed, A, first, start enforcing the law. And then B, all they're doing is saying we need to look at corporate consolidation, and we need to make the laws that are in 37 states, including Texas, California, New York, consistent around preventing price gouging.
Yeah. And before we go, we have a couple more minutes in this segment, but I want to bring in a caller who actually is a food producer. Calvin, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, Errol. Thanks for being on. I was actually driving to visit some customers, and I had to pull over and call, because the things you're saying, I mean, from the supplier side, customers don't, I think, understand how challenging it is to make food, not just from, you know, dealing with cost increases, but food safety and everything that's been put in place that you have to do as a supplier. And it's one reason there's been so much consolidation. But at some point, you have to increase prices because of the pressure on all sides. Are you seeing anything, though, from shoppers with resisting price increases? Because it doesn't seem as if there's been any pushback yet from saying we're just not going to buy these categories anymore.
Yeah. Dozens of categories are down in unit volume, which I call demand. So that's the thing why I don't buy the stimulus check explanation or the Fed printing money explanation. Demand is down.
Yeah.
Demand is down in ambient packaged grocery. Demand is down in dairy. Demand is way down in meat. So, yeah, it's what we call demand elasticity in the industry. the actual units that people are turning are down. And it's happened to a lot of these big food companies where they made more money by selling less product by raising prices.
Eventually that would have to catch up to them.
It, right? It has been catching up. So that, and it's been catching up to consumers. And most of what we're talking about really happened in 2022, 2023. This is sort of old news. And this is also about Biden Harris.
But we're having an election in 2024.
Yeah. So now it's a hot topic. Yeah. Right, he's totally right on what he's saying.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Calvin, for that comment on Studio 2. We appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And so we're going to be going to a break in about a minute. But so we want to ask you this question. How are grocery store prices affecting your family? Are grocery store prices a top issue for you in this election? The email is studio2@whyy.org. You can call 888-477-9499. And on the other side of this, we're going to talk about the politics of grocery store prices. We're going to talk about what government can do. And Errol, you kind of touched on that. And we're gonna look at the politics of this. Yeah.
Yeah. I think also just looking at government solutions and whether they're actual solutions, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can identify a problem. You can identify a problem, but sometimes the levers that we pull to try to fix those problems can make them even worse, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're going to talk about what the candidates are proposing, what voters seem to be thinking about this. And of course, we're going to hear from more of you. Studio2@whyy.org is the email address. We'll be right back on Studio 2.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
When I do shopping, it's a nuisance because now you have to do so many things on top of your head. Like, all right, should I get this? No, I shouldn't, because then I'm not gonna be able to have another item that I really need.
We still have like the same amount, we're just buying less. And we have to cut out like a lot of other things that we usually do buy and go for more of like the cheaper options.
This is Studio 2. Welcome back. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, again there, you heard from some shoppers in our region interviewed by students in WHYY's education department. That was lovely. And we are going to continue our conversation right now on high prices at the grocery store in an otherwise strong economy. Is this issue enough to impact the outcome of the upcoming presidential election? We have two guests staying with us for the rest of the hour. Heather Long is an economic columnist at the Washington Post, and Errol Schweitzer is a former vice president of grocery at Whole Foods Market and publisher of the Checkout Grocery Update Substack.
And our question today is, how are grocery store prices affecting your family? And how are these prices affecting your vote? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. I want to tee up our next part of the conversation with a voicemail from one of our listeners, Alice in Westchester. Take a listen.
I am not so much concerned about the profit margin for individual grocery stores. That is really low. What I am concerned and absolutely horrified is the profit margins for the, what is it, six corporations that basically control all the food in the country.
And so that's Alice from Westchester. And so, Heather, I want to tee up this part of a conversation with the first question to you. This poll from the New York Times and Siena College, they say that voters are feeling persistently sour about the economy, and they found that just 2% of likely voters considered the economy to be excellent, as compared to 49% who rated it as poor. I want you to kind of, as we try to talk about the politics of grocery store pricing and the economy, how many folks actually have this as the issue that will determine their vote?
I don't know about grocery store prices as the issue, but certainly It's a much bigger part of it than any of us thought. I think for a long time, there's been a lot of research indicating that if gas prices are low, it really helps the incumbent party. And as gas prices go higher, you know, it really hurts. And I think a lot of economists have been surprised that grocery prices are having a similar impact this time around. And I will say what's interesting about that polling data is while Americans have been rather pessimistic, the vibe session, as it's known, about the economy, it's a much more interesting question. And you can see it in that New York Times poll when people are asked about their personal financial situation. And that's where you get slightly more positive views. So people will say, I'm doing okay. It's been hard. It's been tough. Every time I go to the store, I really have to decide what I'm going to buy. Are we going to have meat or not this week? But when they're asked about the national economy or the state economy, that's when they get pessimistic. So there's an interesting dichotomy there. I think the big question is, what are these candidates going to do about it? We've spoken a lot this hour about Vice President Harris's plan around going after the price gougers, possibly doing occasional price caps on certain items. But former President Trump has an even more aggressive plan. He talks, of course, about putting tariffs on all imports coming into the United States. About 15% of the food supply in the United States is imported. So that would seemingly raise costs on those items, things like coffee in particular that we are generally imported. The other big one he speaks constantly about is immigration, limiting immigration or even deporting certain immigrants who are here already. That's obviously was another huge part of the reason that food prices and other prices went up when we also had a labor shortage in certain parts of the last few years. I think it's really interesting. The Patriot News in Central Pennsylvania just did a great story this week on Pennsylvania's fruit belt in the middle part of the state in places like Adams County and how much they rely on immigrants. Parts of Adams County now are 50% Hispanic. And a lot of that is because that's the people who are picking your apples.
Yeah,
and
Adams County apples, yeah.
Yes, that those make it to stores in Philadelphia or where I am in Washington, D.C. So the last one that I think is really important to remember about Trump's policies is he really wants to reduce the size of the federal government. And I think you have to think about what does that mean to agencies like the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, or the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. A lot of those agencies play a big role when things like a bird flu happens, which really was a major reason that egg prices at the end of 2022 and early 2023 spiked to $5 for 12, you know, for a dozen eggs, was trying to control bird flu. And we really needed those federal agencies to step in and figure out where was that coming from and how could we control and reduce some of these outbreaks that can really cause certain products to spike.
And let me ask you along those lines, Heather, because you just said that Trump's proposals seem unlikely to lower prices. We've talked about the Harris proposals. They seem, from what I heard Errol saying, somewhat modest. They wouldn't expect it to be like totally game changing. So I guess I put this back to you, Heather Long. Like, does the federal government really have much control in this area? We are talking about a complex global economy. And then asking one executive in one country to do something about it. I mean, is it realistic to think the president can move this much?
Yeah, I would argue not much. And I think that some of your initial callers said that very sentiment at the top of the hour. Yeah. What I do think's been interesting, I would point to two things that have really helped to bring down prices in the last year or two under the Biden administration. Number one, they kind of got lucky, but energy prices going back down, that really impacts the packaging and the transportation of goods, which is a huge part of the cost. You know, obviously, there's been record amounts of oil production under the Biden administration, and we would hope that whoever gets elected would continue some of that going forward, particularly as Pennsylvanians. And number two, I think that's really key, is we were just talking about that immigration aspect. And I think that's one of the big differences between the Harris and the Trump proposals, is how they would treat immigration going forward, which is such a key part of our food supply in the United States.
I want to bring in a caller. We have Apollo from Doylestown who wants to talk about alternatives for shoppers. Apollo, you are on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My question is, where the majority of the food out in the suburbs now are sort of handled by the Costcos and the BJs, and yet they keep pushing their pricing up. And I'm wondering, where is an alternative? Because the local markets that are doing that, we already know they're sky high because we've moved towards Costco and BJ and some of the larger retailers for better consumption and pricing modeling. And then I'll also add to your last caller, the tariffs. Tariffs doesn't help when most of the products that we see in these major stores are from California, you know, the fruit products and the different things we're talking about. How can someone stop that? Because when you mention the unit prices are going down for less demand and the products and all the other products that are being raised in price so they can meet their minimum revenue generation for their shareholders, how does someone stop that from occurring? And where do we as a consumer say, okay, if they're going to do that, where is our alternative?
Because your lever to pull, Apollo, is I'm going to shop somewhere else. So I'll put that to you, Errol Schweitzer.
Yes.
I mean, where are the alternatives? Shouldn't they be popping up now? Shouldn't someone be taking advantage of this here?
These are structural issues.
Yeah.
You can't buy your way out of this problem. Mm-hmm. Like we've talked about 40 years of non-enforcement of antitrust, where you have consolidation at all levels of the food industry. And we have to actually start putting these laws into practice. But we also have to look at how public, the government, however you say it, can step into supply chains, perhaps by creating buffer stocks so that there's competition to the grain traders, perhaps publicly owned supply chains so there's competition to privately held supply chains, which are corporate and profit focused. You want to look at more employee and worker ownership, like a grocery store here in the area is employee owned, so that you're breaking up these companies that are publicly traded and giving billions upon billions to shareholders. Maybe give the companies back to their employees so that they could set prices and they could benefit. Sorry, go ahead. You want to ask me a question?
No. I wanted to kind of follow up to that and say, so you're telling me that there's no, that as a regular shopper, there's no alternative for you to do. There's no place you can go to try to send a message.
You can go to your political representatives to say, you need to fix this. Mm. And me as somebody in the industry, I don't want to blame any one aspect because I think all sectors are too consolidated. You know, obviously, looking at what the FTC is doing around the Kroger-Albertsons merger makes a lot of sense. What we need to do now as citizens, as Günter Grass said, is to keep our mouths open. We need to advocate because there are major changes that need to happen. And there's countries that have done other things like windfall profit taxes or clawing back excess profits in other industries. Yeah. We may want to look at that and particularly in packaged foods. Mm. We may want to look at where there maybe should be some price controls in core commodities. And this is not at the level of consumer price, but at the level of cost before it goes to the manufacturer. And the one thing that I've also proposed is I think we should universalize SNAP. If you want to be able to afford healthier food, make it free. You could have all fresh produce free in this country at point of sale for $90 billion. And I want to just say that's less than 1/10 of the annual Pentagon budget and less than 1/2 of what Biden and Harris have increased in the military budget since 2019.
I think Ron from earlier would agree with you on that. Real quick, because we're running
out of time. Make produce
free. Make produce free. I want to real quick bring in one more caller. We have only a couple minutes left, but I want to make sure Dan from Philly gets on the air. Dan's online too and is also in the grocery industry. Dan, help us land the plane here.
Hey, Avi. Hey, Sherry, and your panel. So I have 30 seconds, and there was a bunch of rambling as I'm driving to a grocery store to have literally to multiple grocery stores to have a construction walkthrough and measure things. So specifically, I'm in store decor, but I worked hand in hand with all the construction, and I'm just ignorant of. And I know we're talking about cost of groceries. It certainly affects me and my family. And no matter what we sit down a year ago and try to budget, we're just never, it just seems to be creeping up or it's been difficult. But that's not the point of the call. The point of the call is when smarter people than myself are figuring out the cost to the grocers, and I work with national retailers and also independents, but I know that their costs are high too, especially if we're doing a new construction project or a renovation. I mean, everything from real estate to their labor, minimum wages have gone up. I don't have an answer to this, but, you know, it's not just the food, but on top of it, you know, the operators themselves have greater costs that's outside of just what we're, you know, the actual specific, food costs.
So it's not just inflation or price increases in the food production is what Dan is saying.
Construction prices construction prices have gone up easily, depending on who I'm speaking to, you know, 60-70% on certain things.
And Dan, we have to leave it there. But thank you so much. That was Dan from Philly.
Yeah, great comment. Errol, real quick response as we start to wrap things up.
Yeah, I mean, inflation is the rate of price increases going up. You're paying more for groceries now. The majority of what has driven that has been corporate profits. Yes, labor rates have gone up. There was a slow motion general strike where people were like, we want to stop dying and getting sick at work. We don't want to, you know, come into these working conditions. Let's remember that about essential workers. Mm-hmm. People were dying. And it wasn't just that, oh, we don't want to work anymore. Mm-hmm. So all this stuff contributed. But what we need to do is look at structural issues in the food industry, consolidation, profiteering, and consider how we can actually get more involved as a public to get more control over it. Because right now we don't.
Heather Long, final word as we wrap up in about 30 seconds as you've been listening to all of this.
I just say the encouraging news is we finally are starting to see some wake up and push back against high prices. And while we'd all like to see some prices come down even more, there are a couple of categories where we are starting to see some price declines. I know personally, I just paid the cheapest for Diet Cokes that I had in 2 or 3 years myself. But as Earl says, that doesn't mean that these bigger term issues will just magically go away.
All right.
I think I'm hearing a little clash, which means it's time to go. We are lost in the supermarket, but we are not lost here on Studio 2. Our show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Al Banks is our engineer. Special thanks to Studio 2 youth correspondents Donna Al-Azam and Nora Dorn for gathering sound for our program today. I want to thank our guests, Heather Long and Errol Schweitzer. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolf-Manera.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for joining us today. A candle on the shop, I believe. A candle for the special offer. A guarantee personality.